Good afternoon. This is Hometown Alaska, and I'm Tika Ballas. With less than a week to go, the airwaves are saturated with political ad campaigns. Today, we are inviting listeners to participate in the discussion, where we will be dissecting an item many voters are following, Ballot Measure 2, the Alaska Parental Notification Act, which states that abortion for a minor requires notice to or consent from a parent or guardian, or through a judicial bypass. Proponents of this law say they want to return to parents the right of overseeing their teenage daughter's medical decisions. Opponents say this is an intrusive government mandate that puts bureaucrats in the middle of Alaska families. In the studio with me today are representatives from both sides of this issue. We have Bernadette Wilson, the campaign manager for Alaskans for Parental Rights, or the Yes on 2 campaign, and we have Rhiannon Good, the campaign manager from Alaskans Against Political Mandates, or the No on 2 campaign. This show will be rebroadcast again tonight at 10 p.m. following the debates between House, Senate, Lieutenant Governor, and Governor from 7 to 10 p.m., and it can also be downloaded off our website at kska.org. If you don't get all you need on today's show, a closer look and addressing Alaskans also covered ballot measure number 2, as well as ballot measure 1. You can find that on our website, as well as interviews and analysis of the candidates. Again, this is Hometown Alaska, and today we're discussing ballot measure 2, the Alaska Parental Notification Act. If you would like to join this conversation, or perhaps you have any questions for either of my guests, please call in at 550-8433. That's 550-8433, or you can email us at hometownalaska@kska.org. Now, let's start this afternoon, the beginning of our conversation, with Bernadette Wilson from Yes on 2 campaign. Bernadette, in short, can you tell our listeners what Yes on 2 means?
Yes on 2. We are pushing for a yes to on ballot measure 2, which, as you just said, would require parental notification in the event that a child 17 years and younger goes to seek an abortion. We are pushing this issue for a couple different reasons, to give parents back the right to raise their children, to oversee medical decisions of their child that is made. We feel that that is important to protect the health and safety of these young girls that could be undergoing a medical procedure without having a parent or legal guardian knowing.
And Rhiannon, can you tell us a little bit about the No on 2?
Sure, absolutely. And, you know, here in Alaska, as well as nationwide, most teens who are facing this type of crisis situation, they already involve a parent. And we believe that's a good thing. You know, parents rightfully want to be involved in a crisis situation, especially in a crisis situation, so you can be there for your teen and help them through it. But it's our feeling that the government simply can't mandate family communication. And since most teens are already talking to a parent and involving a parent in these decisions, this law really only affects those teens who simply cannot go to a parent because of issues at home, whether that's abuse or drug or alcohol problems. And these are the teens that we're really afraid are going to delay going to see a doctor or aren't going to go see a doctor at all and not get any help. And those are the teens that we feel are put at risk by this type of government mandate.
Thank you. There are a few different aspects of this that are worthy of great detailed conversation. But first, let's go back to where this all comes from. Bernadette, can you give us some background on this ballot, too?
Well, Alaska actually has on the books parental consent when a minor child is seeking abortion. Now, in 1997, Planned Parenthood came back, sued the state of Alaska, said that it was unconstitutional. Here we are 13 years later, we did have a piece of legislation that said that was requesting that this issue be revisited or for parental notification. It sat on the desk of Betty Davis. And when Betty Davis even refused to hear it, then Alaska Family Council, using Alaskans for Parental Rights, went under the arm of Alaskans for Parental Rights, went around the state of Alaska, collected nearly 50,000 signatures from Alaskans that were tired and fed up with the government, with the bureaucrats not doing anything, and said, you know what? We're not going to leave this up to the bureaucrats in the courtroom. We're not going to leave it up to attorneys. Give parents back their rights. And so after we collected those signatures, they were approved, and here we are on the ballot looking for a yes vote.
Now, originally, though, this was put through in, I believe, 1997, but it was overturned by the court stating that it was unconstitutional.
Parental consent. Yes, parental consent. This will ask for parental notification.
And it was the consent aspect that was considered unconstitutional?
Yes.
And did you want to add anything to that?
No, I mean, that's a good...
Okay. Now, with it being deemed unconstitutional, was it only the consent versus the notification that was changed, or was there something else in it?
No, it was consent. In fact, one of the justices that was there actually came back and said, but, you know, we do feel that parental notification would be within state allowance.
So. Now, the wording on it now, as it stands, basically states that it is a notification or consent. Can you explain what the difference in that wording means?
Well, right now, under this law, a physician would have to notify a parent or legal guardian and give that parent 48 hours notice before performing the abortion. Now, if there is consent, it would waive the waiting period. So that's why you're seeing consent, but it is notification.
Okay, and what about this, then, about notification? They have, 48 hours to notify?
Right. Well, the parent would have to be notified 48 hours before an abortion is performed.
And is that, I just wanted an ideal situation here. Like, okay, a minor goes to a doctor and schedules?
Okay, so let's say that the minor sits down with the physician, and Rhiannon, correct me if I mess up here at all or if I'm wrong, but a minor would go to a physician and say, you know, here, I'm here to have an abortion. The doctor would say, okay, well, you know, how old are you? Obviously, if they're under the age of 17, I have to notify your parent. And so then the child, the doctor, whatever, could notify the parent. If the parent says, okay, yeah, fine, whatever, go ahead and do it, then the abortion could be formed right then. If the parent does not give consent but is at least notified, and the parent says, oh my gosh, well, you can't perform this abortion, well, that's not true. The physician can perform the abortion, but it has 48 hours. Would have to wait 48 hours.
Okay.
Right?
And the notification would, the physician has to try to notify either in person, by phone, and if they are unable to contact an actual legal guardian, the law is very specific about how they're supposed to try and make sure that's an actual parent that they're talking to, as far as forms of ID to check, checking
right.
public
so,
directories. And if they can't get a hold of the parent, then there's a certified mail to a verified mailing address, and then again 48 hours after.
How does one check and validate somebody's identity over a telephone?
The law actually, this ballot measure 2 actually states that they would have to try and verify the phone number that was given to them in some type of public directory, as well as, it says, ask questions that would suggest that this is actually the parent or
right.
guardian.
Right. So in most kids that come in, I mean, I think Rhiannon and I can agree on this, that most kids that come in, if they have an involved parent, if they are going for parental notification and not an affidavit or judicial bypass, if they are going for parental notification, 10-1, they know where their parent lives. They know where their parent works. They know their cell phone number, their work number, or if not directly for that parent, which I mean, I think it's probably pretty safe to say most of the times they do, you know, or, okay, here's grandma's, and my grandma knows what my mom's work number is, something to that extent. What that does is then provide so that 14-year-old, a 14-year-old can't walk in and her 25-year-old boyfriend can't say, oh, yeah, I'm her dad. So it helps to protect against that.
And I understand that the doctor has to make this call specifically themselves. It can't be...
The physician has to give the notification themselves.
Okay, and then what comes up in the conversation is the other aspect of this, which is the judicial bypass. And Rhiannon, can you explain what that entails according to this bill?
Ballot Measure 2 does allow for a judicial bypass or a waiver, and with the judicial bypass, a teen could appear in court, or if she was in a rural area, she could have the hearing itself by phone, but she would have to fill out the paperwork that would be available at the court and argue to a judge, telling that judge, and this is something that we just don't think is a viable option for teens, to go to a judge and talk about the most intimate details of her life with a stranger, especially if she's from a difficult home situation where the courts may have already failed her. And as far as the waiver goes, she would, in effect, have to turn her parents in writing and sign and notarize a statement detailing her abuse, as well as get someone from a very short list of people who are deemed acceptable by this law to additionally sign and notify a waiver saying that they have personal knowledge and detail that abuse as well.
And it seems that in a small, compacted community like in remote Alaska, this might be problematic. But what I don't understand is how in a remote area of Alaska you come upon the paperwork, et cetera, that needs to be completed for this. And Bernadette, can you answer that?
Well, the first thing is that, I mean, we talk about these rural areas. Can they get to a judge or whatever? They're going to get to the judge the same exact same way that they're going to get to that physician. So if they can get to the physician is going to have the capability to make the phone call and to help them with those necessary steps. I mean, we're looking at an affidavit or a judicial bypass. I mean, you know, let's talk about those girls that have been raped or there's incest or there's abuse. That's why, obviously, that is why that they're going to get an affidavit or a judicial bypass. So is it difficult? Are they in a sensitive situation? Yes, I agree with Rhiannon 100% on that issue. Now, but I have to ask, what is more difficult for that child? Is it more difficult to ask them to talk to a judge on the phone? Is that more difficult for that child? Or sending that child back into that home environment where the abuse continues for another day, another week, another month? What puts that child into more of a sensitive situation? So yes, they are very fragile. It is a very sensitive subject. Is it the easiest thing in the world? No. Is it as difficult as our opposition says, as No On Two says? Absolutely not. I mean, we have seen states such as Texas, Florida, where they have parental notification and have recognized how easy it is to get an affidavit or a judicial bypass. And in those states, while this is not necessarily a reflection on my own opinion or what would happen in the state of Alaska, but in those states, they have found that a judicial bypass and affidavit is so easy to get that it has been abused.
And I would say that in those states as well, what we do find is that teens delay going to the doctor, especially if they're around 17 and they can wait till their 18th birthday. So that's one of our biggest fears, is that this judicial bypass or the waiver may seem like such an insurmountable barrier to a teen that they may simply delay getting care or not come to us at all, in which case, if they are in an abusive situation, that physician can't ask them the questions to begin with, can't get them help, can't perform their duty as a mandated reporter and report that there is abuse going on. So our fear is for those teens who really, they're too scared that a doctor's going to call their parents. They're not sure how to do the judicial bypass. They're not sure how to do the waiver. The whole thing just seems completely scary to them. So they just don't go to the doctor at all and try and ignore the problem, hope it'll go away, look to the internet for options or take matters into their own hands.
Well, and many states where Planned Parenthood themselves has helped this child get an affidavit or judicial bypass. They have walked them through this and guided them through it. So it's not this teen goes, oh, I have to have an affidavit, but there's no guidance.
But there is nothing actually within the written script of this ballot measure that states that would happen, correct?
That would require Planned Parenthood to give them help?
That would do a step-by-step for teenagers going and seeking help or a judicial bypass. There isn't anything actually written in it stating that Planned Parenthood or any other physician would have to serve that.
Right. No. They would. Yeah. No, they are not required to do that. But that is what has happened in other states. And out of 34 states that have parental consent and or notification laws, I mean, because as Rhiannon mentions, you know, will kids take something, take dangerous methods into their own hands? And out of 34 states with parental consent and or notification, we have not seen that. Not in one single state have we seen these, what we refer to as back alley abortions, increase. Not in one. And in several states, they have actually found notification to be so highly effective in reducing the number of infections and problems that come about as a result of an abortion that they have actually gone from notification to consent. I mean, Massachusetts has had a parental consent law for nearly 30 years now and found it to be so highly effective. So, and also in dealing with these back alley abortions, I mean, as Rhiannon said earlier, the good news is most kids do tell their parents.
Now, you state that there are no big figures of back alley abortions. However, I did find a lot of numbers from Department of Pediatrics, I believe it was, that stated there was, in fact, an increase, however, of young women using drugs or alternative means of trying to self-induce an abortion. And actually, Rhiannon, and do you know anything about these numbers?
And I don't know the exact numbers as well, but that is what we see. And what we also see in those states is that delay in getting care. And we do see in those states that have neighboring states without parental notification or consent laws, those teens will cross state lines, which obviously they can't cross state lines here in Alaska, which just makes it a little bit more scary from our perspective that they're more likely to take matters into their own hands or delay care.
Again, we're today discussing ballot measure 2. Our guests are Bernadette Wilson from the Yes on 2 campaign and Rhiannon Good from the No on 2 campaign. On our website, you will find links to both of these campaigns at kska.org. If you have specific questions or actual knowledge of specific questions or cases applicable to this measure, please give us a call at 550-8433. If you'd like to weigh in, you can just go ahead and give us a call or email us at hometownalaska@kska.org. We do have Deanna on the air. Good afternoon, Deanna.
Hey, I have a few questions for both of your guests today. I have been a resident of Alaska since 1985. My daughters were born up here 14 and 15 years ago. And so, you know, I'm just wondering, my 14-year-old is sitting, she wasn't born here. Actually, she was born somewhere else, but we were Alaskan residents away at school and moved back up here when my husband finished college. So my question is, first of all, for both ladies, are you both Alaskans? Are you registered to vote here? And do you have children? I'm just curious about that as far as background is concerned.
Okay. Thank you, Deanna. We'll go ahead and start with you, Rhiannon.
Sure. I actually just moved up here with my family about 4 months ago. Very happy to be here. And I do have a little boy. He's 2.5 years old.
And for you, Bernadette?
I was born and raised in Alaska. Yes, I am a registered voter. I have voted in every single Alaskan election since the day that I turned 18. I am proud to say that I am a mother of 2 children. So while I was born and raised here, I am also raising my children here. And I was a pregnant teenager. So I know what that's like to be that scared teenager.
Thank you. You know, one thing that concerns me about this whole issue is that Planned Parenthood is giving money toward the opposition toward this measure, and they will then profit from abortions that they will be able to perform if this measure goes down. And it seems to me... I'm kind of struggling for what kind of word to use here, but
over 50% of the funding for the opposition on this campaign has come from Planned Parenthood and the ACLU. And yes, it would appear as though it were a conflict of interest. Planned Parenthood does have financial interest in this. Yes.
Deanna, now specifically, your question then might be in regards to the funding for the both campaigns. Both campaigns are funded. We can get to that right off. And your question would maybe be perhaps that does this go in then to benefit Planned Parenthood? Is that correct?
Well, that's part of it. Also, it's interesting to me that the lady who's representing the other side of the issue just moved here and apparently hasn't been here long enough to vote in any elections, and yet she's the one representing a group that's called Alaskans Against Government Mandates. I would like to also make one other comment. Since the host of the show asked if we had personal knowledge, I do, actually, of a young lady in the Valley, and again, I'm not going to give any identifying factors, but she intended to get an abortion and was had broken the law. She was sent home in the custody of her father, and her father was not informed that she was pregnant at 13 and planning to get an abortion. He was allowed to work while she was at home in his custody, And he came home from work one day to find her bleeding and needing to go to the doctor, and he had not been informed that she was pregnant. To me, that is the government stepping between parents and their children, and that is what I am hoping will not happen. I hope that this measure passes so that when my girls, I mean, hopefully we'll never be in that kind of situation, but I also don't want to be in the kind of situation where they are facing that kind of threat to their health at home, and I have no knowledge of it. And thank you all for listening off the air.
Okay, thank you, Deanna. Now, Rhiannon, did you want to respond to what our listener Deanna had to say?
Well, as far as the funding goes, our campaign does have a great deal of funding by Planned Parenthood, and we're very happy for their help because they work with these teens every day. And, you know, we also have the support of our coalition, which does include, you know, Planned Parenthood, the ACLU, the YWCA, as well as organizations like the Alaska chapter of the American Academy of Pediatrics, who released a position paper on ballot measure 2 and came out against it because of the fact that it is so dangerous for teens who may potentially delay care.
Now, another question was that Deanna mentioned that she had a friend whose daughter was pregnant and her father didn't know about it. Now, this ballot measure does not instill anywhere that a doctor has to notify a parent that their child is pregnant, though, correct?
No. Under this ballot measure, it's just abortion. So if a teen did come in and was pregnant and wanted to continue the pregnancy or get prenatal care, the doctor would not have to notify the parents of that.
But it is important to note that there are a lot of complications that can come about from having an abortion, whether it's an infection, perhaps it's an allergic reaction to medication that she's been given. Perhaps there's depression. It is important that a parent know so that if something does arise, if a complication does arise from having an abortion, that parent is there to see to it that this then in turn gets treated for. Because if this child starts, as happened in Alaska, you know, this girl goes in, has an abortion, she starts hemorrhaging. Well, the doctor now has to call that parent to get permission to say, hey, this is what's happening. I've got to treat your daughter for X, Y, and Z. If a parent doesn't know, if a legal guardian doesn't know, who is there to help when something does go wrong? Who is there to make sure this child, you know, oh my gosh, my daughter's suddenly depressed. Now they're there to help.
And I would add to that a pregnancy in itself, especially, you know, an unplanned pregnancy in itself is a very serious situation. And we would hope that teens go seek counseling and go seek medical care, which, again, is one of the reasons that we are opposing this law, because it really does put that barrier between teens and getting the care in the first place. And that's what we're really worried about, is those teens who are just going to delay getting care potentially. And teens are almost twice as likely as adults to delay the diagnosis of a pregnancy. And then to delay that care even more, you know, pushes them into the next trimester.
And we have Linda on the air right now. Are you calling in this afternoon, Linda, with a question or to weigh in?
Yes, I have a question. One of them was answered. I was wondering who was funding the campaign. But I'm also curious about how much of the money that they're spending on the no vote is coming from outside of Alaska.
Okay, that question again would be for you, Rhiannon.
And all of that information is available on the APOC website, where we file reports. And yes, we do have money coming in from out of state. We have some Planned Parenthood affiliates as well as other people from out of state who have given us money. And I think that's pretty standard up here in Alaska, and we're happy to have their help, especially those people who have fought this initiative before, because they get it and they know the government can't mandate family communication, and they've been there.
And on that note, our funding for the yes vote has been within the state of Alaska. You look at our top three donors, they have nothing to lose or gain by this ballot measure passing. They are concerned Alaskans. And while Planned Parenthood has outraised us, outspent us, I believe our number of donors is actually a much longer list, again, of Alaskans.
And all those can be listed on their website by law. Both campaigns have those listed on their site. So, Linda, if you wanted to know more about that, or all of our listeners, their sites are listed on our website at kska.org. Again, today we are discussing Ballot Measure 2, obviously a very contentious issue. Our guests are Bernadette Wilson from the Yes on 2 campaign and Rhiannon Good from the No on 2 campaign. And again, if you'd like to call in and weigh in at 550-8433, or you can email us at hometownalaska@kska.org. Lacey, we have you on the phone from Fairbanks. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. I was just calling to weigh in. What concerns me about this measure is that I really think it puts a good portion of teenage girls at risk if this bill does pass, both from fear in the household, if they're from a house that isn't very nice, if they face abusive parents at home, and then also just the fact that in the 35 states that laws like this have passed, teens are less likely to go get any medical care when it comes to preventative family stuff like that. So it's just, it's not a safe bill for our teenage girls at all.
Thank you, Lacey. In regards to whether it is safe, I was just curious, how many abortions are performed every year in this state currently? Do we know?
There's a report online that of minors. Minors, it's under 125, I believe. Okay. It might be like under 130. And under the age of 15, it was 7 in 2009.
So this would be a law that would basically affect about less than 150 teenagers.
Mm-hmm. Well, it would, right. Okay.
Yeah. And so we have Dave on the line from Eagle River. Good afternoon, Dave.
Hello. I'd like to weigh in and also ask a question. As far as weighing in, I just think that even non-troubled teens can sometimes make rash decisions, and I would hate for my girls to have to make that kind of a decision without my input. But the question that I have for the panelists, if they know it, since they're probably experts in these type of fields, is what other surgical procedures can minors get without a parental notification? And I'll just take my answer offline.
Thank you, Dave.
Thank you. As far as the other procedures that teens can get without parental notification or consent, any emergency procedure if they can't reach the parents, as well as, again, any treatment for pregnancy, like prenatal care, going into labor, if it was a C-section.
I do think that there is a key thing there, surgical procedure. There is no surgical procedure in the state of Alaska that can be performed on a minor child without a parent being notified unless that child's life is an immediate risk of death. And so no surgical procedure.
And
none.
We don't currently have like a parental consent for birth control, do we? Or
no.
Counseling? Okay. Because in some states, I do know that in Texas, where they have a consent and a notification law, that they do have a parental consent for birth control.
Right. And we are talking about a surgical procedure.
And I heard on... What was I just listening to? I heard on mentioned on A Closer Look, Bernadette, that you mentioned that Measure 2 restores parental constitutional rights.
Mm-hmm.
I just wanted to know for clarification, what part of the Constitution?
What was that quote?
It was, quote, it restores parental constitutional rights.
Parents have rights to rear their children. That's why parents have rights over their minor children. They have rights, they have duties, they have obligations. It is their responsibility to see to it that their children are educated, that their health is tended for. And if a parent neglects one of those responsibilities, they are then held accountable. There is, you know, if a parent has to give... consent and or notification, and the list goes on and on. I mean, everything from taking an Advil to seeing a rated R movie to going on a field trip. A parent must know. Yes, you cannot say that a parent has to know about all of these things, but by the way, when it comes to abortion, we don't want to tell you. We're going to tell you when it comes to abortion, the government cannot come into your life and tell you what you can and cannot know about your child's life.
But in fact, isn't this, and Rhiannon, correct me if I'm wrong, isn't this exactly what your campaign is about? The government mandating that something has to be told to the parent.
Right, and we don't think that the government can mandate family communication, which is what this law is trying to do, and it's just putting bureaucrats and it's putting the courts in the middle of family decisions. And that fear is that government intrusion and those government mandates are really going to deter the teen from seeking care. And you know, we're not talking about an aspirin. We are talking about a fairly serious procedure, and we're talking about a pregnancy. And if a teen, even if she's from a troubled home, may not feel as uncomfortable telling her parents she has a headache as she does about telling them that she's pregnant, even from a troubled home. And if she then delays getting that aspirin or doesn't get that aspirin at all or finds another solution to her headache, that's not going to radically alter her life as it would if she delayed getting any care or didn't get any care at all for a pregnancy.
And yet, even then, a parent still has to know before a teacher can give a child an Advil at school. Now, I want to say that I agree with Rhiannon. You cannot mandate family communication. You cannot force a teenager to sit down and talk to a parent. That's not what we're saying. We're not saying that the child has to notify the parent. We're saying that the physician needs to notify the parent. And in looking at how we got here, how did we get here? I will tell you how we got here. Because the government did step in. Because in a courtroom, Planned Parenthood with their attorneys and bureaucrats sat there and decided that they were going to take away this right of parents to know what was going on
but
in their
actually,
child's life.
I just want to clarify. They didn't take away the right to know at that point. They took
consent.
Away consent,
right.
Mandatory
and,
consent.
Right. And when
Nobody
this bill
has...
right, when this bill sat on Betty Davis' desk in the legislature, long before Rhiannon was in Alaska, Betty Davis refused to even hear it. The government would not do anything. It was nearly 50,000 Alaskans that signed that petition. Not elected officials, not Republicans, not Democrats, Alaskans. Alaskans that stood up and said, you cannot mandate to me what I can and cannot know about my child's life. That is the government mandate.
Okay, we're going to take another call here. Don from Fairbanks. Good afternoon, Don.
Good afternoon. Thanks to Radio Free America and thanks to your station for supporting such a good conversation about an open topic.
Thanks for calling in, Don.
I'm a long-term supporter of Planned Parenthood, and I'm planning on voting no, and I've been encouraging friends and family to do so also because I'm hoping to vote down the issue in the primaries instead of it getting to the open elections and having to juggle up the court times. Has there been any sort of conversation about what type of anticipated argument there would be after this measure?
Well, actually, Don, let's just clarify for 1 second really fast. Rhiannon, if you could clarify for us that this doesn't go on after this, right?
No, this is the primary on August 24th. It's a straight up or down yes or no vote.
Yeah, we will not. This will not go to the general election.
If you want to vote on this measure, you need to do it in the primary.
Does that help?
Terrific. Yeah, thank you for your time, gals.
Thank you for your call, Don.
Thanks, Don.
And Mary from Anchorage, how are you doing this afternoon?
Just great, thank you. I guess I'd like to make a couple quick comments. As a school nurse for over 20 years, most of it with teens, I believe that I can say that maybe on one hand I can count the number of young women I've worked with who did not include their parents. The ones that stick out in my mind over 20 years are ones that did not include their parents in the conversation because of horrible family situations. So I think that's another perspective that doesn't get passed around. And for people to say that, well, in states like Texas and other states, and that courts can be involved. Alaska is like no other state. In small communities, it is very difficult to meet with people who can be an advocate for the student. And I will definitely be voting no, and I am also encouraging everybody I know to vote no. I do not believe that the government should get involved in conversations. And thank you for the conversation that you're proposing today.
Thank you very much, Mary. I do want to point out, too, something that has been pointed out to me several times already is the fact that in small communities, too, it is also very hard to find somebody who doesn't intimately know your family one way or another,
very
which
true.
Might make this conversation yet harder. Good afternoon, Carrie from Anchorage. Welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me. I really appreciate it. I just wanted to say that I really don't think that the fact that one of the ladies has only been in Anchorage for 4 months, I think that has, or in Alaska for 4 months, I think that has absolutely no bearing on whether or not she's qualified to talk about the topic for Alaskans. I think Alaskan children are just like every other child in the world, and they deserve care. And I'm definitely going to be voting no, and I also am encouraging other people to vote no. I think that the relationship between parent and child should be healthy enough for the child to go to her parents or parents because she knows that they have wisdom to give. I was lucky enough to have a mother that had a very open relationship with me, and I have a lot of respect for her, and I was able to go to her when I was in trouble. And a lot of kids aren't that fortunate, and we can't force them to go to unhealthy parents when they have an unhealthy relationship with their parents.
And we agree with that, and that's why there is an affidavit or judicial bypass, so that if there is an unhealthy home environment, not only can parental notification be waived, but we can now in turn help that child so that it doesn't not continue.
And it's our position that judicial bypass again, it's very difficult, and it really does present an insurmountable barrier to many teens who really just don't know how to access this, can't get to the courthouse to get the paperwork, don't know how to fill out the paperwork. And again, the waiver is also a huge barrier of finding someone to sign the waiver that's listed on the law, as well as turning your own parents in writing, like notarized, turning them in.
Yet there is not one state that has gone back on their parental notification or gotten rid of parental notification because it was found just simply too difficult. It's just not there.
Okay.
And if I could just say one more thing, mm-hmm. I also feel like I think people are making the assumption that if a child does go to a parent, that parent is automatically going to talk her out of an abortion.
And oh, no, not at all.
My cousin had just the opposite situation happen. My aunt persuaded her to have an abortion, and she didn't want to, and she was very young, and she lives in Ohio, and just the opposite happened to her, and she has a lot of damage just in the opposite direction. So I just want people to know that it goes both ways.
Yeah, no, and we are not here to tell this child have an abortion or don't have an abortion. What we are here to say is that if a child does have an abortion, a parent should know on the premises that we need to look out for anything that could happen as a result of that abortion, infection, depression, allergic reactions, anything that could come about as a result of having a medical procedure, any risks or complications that are involved. That is the motivation. The motivation is not to say, you know, to have a parent either talk a child into or out of an abortion.
Now, Rhiannon, can you answer this question? As far as it goes with the case of an abortion, and I know you might not be able to answer for all private practices that perform them, but perhaps as Planned Parenthood does, is there a follow-up procedure that goes with that, or does it?
There is follow-up, and there's counseling as well as referrals to counseling. And again, that's one of our fears, is that these teens who think that their parent, they're going to get a call home to their parents, they're going to get a note sent home, and these teens who are facing those situations, if they don't come to a doctor or a physician or Planned Parenthood, we can't refer them to counseling, we can't help them if we don't see them.
But who knows that child better? Does Planned Parenthood know that child better, or does that parent? We believe that parents know their children the best, not bureaucrats, not Planned Parenthood.
And for those parents who do have those types of relationships with their teens already, like most teens, they're already coming in with their parents and they're already involving their parents, which we think is a good thing. So we're talking about those teens who they don't have a relationship with their parents. They can't talk to them.
And if they don't have that relationship, then this ballot measure would help to protect those kids from that unhealthy home environment. I would like to, I mean, right now, think about this. Right now, we could have a 14-year-old girl. She gets raped. In fact, I will tell you this story. When I first came onto this campaign, middle, end of May, I had a mother call me, and when her daughter was 16 years old, she was raped, got pregnant as a result of the rape. The gentleman that raped her takes her to have the abortion, and the rape continues for 4 years. She breaks down in tears and said, had this been law, I could have helped. Right now, if a 14-year-old walks into Planned Parenthood, has an abortion, turns around and walks out, what are we doing to help those kids if they were just raped?
Well, it's like a little bit of a ping pong, and there are a lot of calls getting in. So really fast, let's take a call from Megan here in Anchorage. Good afternoon, Megan.
Hi, how are you, ladies?
Good.
Hi, Megan.
I'm calling with a quick question for Rhiannon. I've been following this debate for some time now, and it's actually quite apropos that I'm the next call, because what Bernadette mentioned is if these girls are raped and they're in an unfortunate situation, Rhiannon, what I'm not sure of is what is your plan? I understand your position is you don't want these young girls to be forced to go into a situation where they're going to be put, you know, just up against the wall. They're pregnant already. They're facing a terrible decision that they have to make because they made, you know, a poor choice in their life. But say they do have the abortion or don't have the abortion, what is your position on helping them afterwards? That's the one question I haven't really heard a good answer from you on. I understand your position, but this girl that gets raped and she goes and has an abortion, I mean, she's left out there floating in this ocean of emotion and physical healing and everything that has to happen afterwards, and I'm not hearing a good plan for what we have to do for these young girls. Whereas the other side, the yes side, does have a plan in that there at least somebody has to know. Somebody out there has to know about this, someone who can help them. I mean, myself personally, I've gone through a couple of miscarriages, and it's hard. You need a friend there. You need someone to be there for you. And these girls, my heart breaks for them if they don't have anyone to help them. So if you could possibly address that for me, Rhiannon, I would appreciate it.
Sure. And for those teens who are facing those types of situations, and they are devastating situations, you know, physicians who perform health care, they're already reporting that abuse to Child Protective Services and getting law enforcement involved if there's any sign of abuse, and physicians take that duty very, very seriously to help those teens if there is any suspected abuse.
But that's assuming that the child brings that up. Now, if that child walks in and has been abused and battered so badly that it is beyond her to bring it up to the physician on her own, that physician is not required to ask her, have you been raped? Have you been abused?
There is, however, I thought that if anything is suspected even, that it has to report it with a minor.
If it's suspected, correct.
So right. If it's even suspected with a minor, and generally speaking, I do know that with an OBGYN, they do go through a list of questions generally
Absolutely.
About the partner.
But yes, there is a list of questions, but I'm just not really, I guess, hearing the answer that there's a plan in place. If this doesn't go through, so we're just leaving all these girls out there to deal with on their own. If, you know, maybe if the doctor does ask the right question and the girl tears up and she, you know, gives it away. But what if she's just very stoic and she just goes in and says, I'm pregnant, I don't want this baby, and she just deals with it because she's had so much to deal with in her life that she's just used to putting on this face. What if there's not that loving doctor out there that's going to go, hey, something's not right. You know, my OB's phenomenal. I know he would know because he's such a good person, but there's doctors out there, just as there's mechanics that just want to get in and get out. And that's what I'm afraid is going to happen if this goes through, that Planned Parenthood, you know, may follow up like, hey, how are you doing? Oh, I'm fine, thank you. Well, I've said I'm fine, thank you, many times in my life, and I've not meant it. Because I want someone to reach out and to help me. And if these girls don't have anyone who knows about their situation, how are they going to deal with it? And that's just what I really haven't heard a good answer from the other side.
Okay, great. Thanks, Megan, for your call. Rhiannon, if you would like to finish that statement.
Sure. And these teens who do come into a Planned Parenthood who are facing those types of situations, there is they go through a rigorous training as far as suspected abuse, and it is reported to law enforcement and protective services, as well as referrals to counseling. And our fear is that with this type of a law, those teens in those situations, they won't come to us at all. So now they're really by themselves. They won't come to us, or they'll really delay coming to us, and that's what's going to put them at risk.
Well, and
okay,
it's great. Interesting that there was some undercover work done on Planned Parenthood outside of the state of Alaska, where these girls came in and said, hey, my boyfriend is X amount of years old, and Planned Parenthood don't tell us that. Essentially wanted to turn a blind eye to it. That is recorded. It's on tape. This research has been done.
Okay, well, I'm not familiar with that, and as you said, it's not in the state of Alaska. So let's stay with the state of Alaska and talk to Kelly here in Anchorage. Hello, Kelly.
Hi, thank you very much for taking my call, and I'm really pleased that we're having such a spirited debate regarding this issue, and I wanted to address Bernadette, and I wanted to specifically address the judicial bypass portion of this measure, and I'd like you to give me a procedural run-through of what exactly that will look like and why you don't believe that that will be too onerous a proposition or too onerous a procedure for these young women to go through.
Well, I think that on the first premises that I would believe that is, as I said, there are 34 states that have consent and or notification. And out of those states that have notification, not one state has had to back down from notification as a result of an affidavit or judicial bypass being so incredibly difficult to obtain.
And I think there was also the question then, what is the step-by-step? Is that correct, Kelly?
That's correct, yeah.
The step-by-step of that would be, well, obviously there's an affidavit which could be signed by a grandparent or an older sibling, 21 years.
And how long do you believe that might take to put together?
How long what would take to put together? I'm sorry.
An affidavit.
Oh, I mean, I suppose it would be on how readily available you could get a hold of someone. I mean, if you were to call my grandmother, you would get a hold of her right now if I were to call her on my cell phone.
Okay, so there would be an affidavit, and then what would come next?
Or this is affidavit or judicial bypass. So if that child sits down and says, hey, you know, I cannot sit down and tell my parent, I don't have an affidavit or whatever, then the judge would have to say, okay, well, why not? And then, of course, we get into the whole, has there been abuse? Has there been rape? Do we need to go see a judge? If we do, do we stand in front of the court, or do we talk to a judge on the phone?
Okay, and how long, I guess, does the measure dictate a time period for getting in front of a judge?
Rhiannon, do you know how long it takes to dictate to get in front of a judge?
It has to be done within 5 business days, so a week. And that's after after the paperwork is all filed.
Yes, so it have to be done within 5 days, and then, and again, too, and I think that Rhiannon and I can probably agree on this. I mean, again, it depends. I know some people are probably easier to get a hold of than others, or, you know, I mean, like I said, if you were to call my grandmother right now, you could do it right away. And also, on how easy it would be, I would assume, to prove that there was abuse and that a judicial bypass was needed right away. But yeah, Rhiannon's got it in front of her, and it is no more than 5 days.
Right. And I guess one of my other questions is the technicalities, I guess the particulars of this. Who's actually coordinating getting the affidavit, filing documents with the court? Is that to be left on the burden of the child that we're talking about here? Or,
no.
In fact, is there another individual who would be overseeing this?
The physician.
So this would all be on the physician?
The physician would oversee that.
Okay, so we're taking this burden and placing this burden, which is a legal, I mean, this, for those of us that are involved in the court system in any shape or form, we know that, so this is involving legal terms, legal documents, something presumably out of the scope of the expertise of the physician. So now we're trying to get doctors involved in the legal system.
The physician would have
a procedure that seems like it's going to take quite a bit longer than 5 days.
The physician would have to follow all of the legal protocol, as with any other physician within the state of Alaska that performs any medical procedure.
And as far as the physician overseeing it, I think what Bernadette might be talking about is the actual notification to the parents. As far as the legal getting the waiver and getting the waiver signed and notarized, as well as filing the paperwork in the courts and dealing with all that, that would be on a burden on the teen. And I believe the law does say that she can be provided with an attorney free of charge, but then that finding that attorney and getting that attorney and all of that would be on the teen.
Absolutely. I guess what my point is, what I wanted to draw out of this, is that this could take quite a bit of time and quite
absolutely
a bit of effort, not only on the doctor but also on this teenage girl that this bill, is purportedly, for those folks supporting this ballot measure, this is supposed to be supporting this teenage girl. I would actually suggest that it's not, and that this particular portion of this measure is one of the most concerning portions of this measure, and I think that it's one of the main reasons why I will be voting no.
So is that
I'm encouraging other folks to vote no.
So that concern then is greater than the concern that this abuse and rape could continue.
No, I'm not saying that it's greater. I'm just pointing out that it's not a solution. This is not a solution. This. I really do not believe this is a solution. And quite frankly, I don't think this is going to work.
Okay, great, Kelly. Thank you for weighing in. And
thank
we have
you
Joni.
Very much. Ladies, have a good day.
Thank you. Joni, we have you in here from Anchorage. Good afternoon.
Yes, hi, this is Joni, and I just want to start out by saying that I'm a 30-year resident of Alaska, and I always vote, and I'm a mother of a daughter who's no longer under 18, but I know that as a mother, I, of course, would have wanted her to come to me, but you know what I did was, when she was 13, I said, you know, if you ever have any problems, you can tell me, I want to know. And it might not be easy, but we'll deal with it together, and you can come to me. And I think that's what, you know, good parent communication is. But I'm also have been a social worker for 30 years, and I know that there are a lot of teens out there who cannot go to their parents and who face abusive and alcoholic situations. And they go to their parents, and they tell them things like this, and they get beat up, they get thrown out of the house. And if a doctor was to call them, they would be even madder. And so I'm just really concerned about the teens and sort of echo the things, the comments that Kelly made.
Well, and I think on both sides of the issue, we recognize that. We are not denying that these children come from abusive situations. Suppose where the discrepancy is how do we deal with those? We think that bringing attention to it and helping to end it is the solution, not sending them back so that it continues.
Excuse me. Yes. Well, if it is an abusive situation and the doctor and the teen goes to the doctor has to report it already. And we've discussed that already. So my opinion is just I'm voting no on this, and I encourage other people to vote no on this. And I also want to say that in terms of the funding for Planned Parenthood, that where does their funding come from? It comes from donors who are Alaskans. And I'm an Alaskan, and I donated, and I'm happy to do that, and I have many friends who did. And so,
well, a large money is that of that money has come from Planned Parenthood out of state, actually. Well, so some has been within the state. You are correct.
Yes.
Joni, thank you.
A lot of it has been. And so, again, I just want to say thank you to Planned Parenthood for sponsoring this or for fighting it with the rest of us who are all voting citizens of Alaska, and we appreciate their work on our behalf. Thank you.
Thank you, Joni. I do want to read really fast that we have an email that came in. It reads, there are more complications possible from a pregnancy than an abortion. What else does it say? Planned Parenthood is a nonprofit organization. No one profits or gains from the passage of this ballot. To imply they are going for gain is purposefully sensational and crass. Many ballot measures involve proponents and opponents that genuinely do profit from passage or failure. The cruise ship initiative, blah, blah, blah. There's a whole lot of, not to downplay this person, there's a lot of stuff, and we have a ton of calls still waiting online here. We've only got 10 minutes left in the show. If you're just tuning in, I'd like to introduce you to the show. This is Hometown Alaska. We are discussing, obviously, a contentious issue, ballot measure 2. Our guests are Bernadette Wilson from the Yes on 2 campaign, which is Alaskans for Parental Rights, and Rhiannon Good from the No on 2 campaign, which is Alaskans Against Government Mandates. You can find all the links to both campaigns at ksk.org. If you didn't get to listen to the entire show and want to hear it later, it will be rebroadcast at 10 p.m. after the gubernatorial debates this evening from 7 to 10 p.m. Or there's also been several other shows here on KSKA at APRN that have covered candidates and both the ballot measures in great detail, and you can find all of those again on our website at kska.org. We have Jerry here in Anchorage. Good afternoon, Jerry. Hello, Jerry.
Well, we lost Jerry. I thought you were going to be our first guy to call.
No.
Have you noticed?
I know.
We've had all women.
Well, we might have another chance. Good afternoon, Alan. How are you doing? Oh, ooh. Alan has a strange voice.
Second man gone wrong.
Wow.
Come on, guys.
Phones do not like the boys.
Well, we're going to go to Jane in Fairbanks. Good afternoon, Jane.
Good afternoon. First, I want to be succinct, but I'm the mom of a teenager, and I'd like to think, under 18, that my child would come to me. But I came of age and was in high school when Roe versus Wade passed, and I remember the atmosphere of fear, and I'm afraid at this point, and I will vote no, I'm afraid that the kids today are so wired, and I spend a lot of time with teenagers, and I see that. And my fear is that a kid who doesn't have the relationship with their parents is going to panic and do research on the Internet. It's really quick to Google, and we're going to end up with kids doing dangerous things, drinking excessive amounts of alcohol, having their boyfriend hit them in the stomach, or other approaches to terminate the pregnancy instead of a safe and legal method. So my belief is that we need to vote no on this issue.
Okay, great. Thank you, Jane. Now, I do have another question for both of my guests here. I was just curious if it's stated anywhere where the estimated cost of enacting and enforcing this ballot measure. And do you know, Rhiannon, have you heard anything on that?
I think that's actually available. They do an estimate, don't they?
I believe.
But I don't know. I think it was, they estimated it as minimal, but I'm not positive on that.
Okay. I could not find that information either, so unfortunately we cannot. If any of our listeners are listening and they happen to be privy to this information, by all means, call in, let us know. Good afternoon, Billy Ray.
Hi.
Hi. Welcome to the show.
Hi. Well, I have a question. I've been in Alaska for 26 years, and I am a survivor of sexual assault abuse. I had two children when I was 14 and 16 by my legal guardian, who is 35 years my senior. My doctor did report it, as well have I. I reported it then, and I still report it now. My concern is, who is going to be accountable when these young girls are so afraid to tell anybody what is going on, let alone contact an advocate on their own to file paperwork?
Thank you, Billy Ray, if you'd like to answer that.
And we would agree with that. And that's really our concern, that it is such an insurmountable barrier that these teens aren't going to go to the doctor at all. They're not going to get care, and they're going to delay it. And that's not a good thing.
Well, and as I've said, I mean, out of 34 states, you know, are we going to stop teens from making bad decisions? No, we can only continue to help to guide them, to educate them. I mean, as I said earlier in this broadcast, Planned Parenthood has said it best. The good news is most kids do tell their parents. As far as this, I think you're bringing up the back alley abortion thing. We've had a couple people bring that up. And as I said, out of 34 states, we cannot show an increase in back alley abortions.
And Billy Ray, did you have another question there?
Actually, I did not. I wasn't going the back door for abortion. I have my children. They're 22 and they're going to be 21. And it's a decision that I would not have changed at all. However, the support that I feel myself and my children should have been given would have stopped the sexual abuse from contributing to myself or another person in my position in his home. So I thank you.
Right. And will we stop every circumstance? Probably not, but it's definitely a step in the right direction.
Correct. And I'll have to agree with that.
Okay.
So thank you for what you're doing, both of you, and thank you for having us on the show.
Great. Thank you, Billy Ray. We are running out of time here. We've only got a few minutes left, and I would like to give each of you a chance to close, and I will just do it in the same order in which we began. So, Bernadette, if you would like to go ahead and give a closing wrap-up on
well,
your
end. Well, I want to thank you, first of all, for having me here, and it's good to sit with Rhiannon and a good sit here with Rhiannon. We both have boys right about the same age, so it's been fun. But, you know, I'm encouraging you to get out and to vote yes, not only to protect your parental rights, but let's really and genuinely look out for the health and safety of these teenagers. Let's send the message to them that even when you've been raped and abused, even in those horrible circumstances, someone is still there. Someone does care, and maybe it's not a parent, but someone is there to help. Let's get the government out of our lives. Let's not allow the government to tell us what we can and cannot know about parents. So let's get rid of the government. Let's protect our kids and give our parents back their rights and vote yes on August 24th.
Great. Thank you. And Rhiannon Good.
And we're urging a no vote on ballot measure, too, because we just really feel most teens already talk to their parents, and the ones who can't are the ones who really, they can't go to their parents because of abuse, because of issues in the home, and the government simply cannot mandate family communication where it doesn't already exist. And that's why organizations like the Alaska Chapter of the American Academy of Pediatrics and the National Association of Social Workers Alaska Chapter and the organizations that work with teens, like the YWCA and Planned Parenthood, have all come out against this measure, because what it does is it puts bureaucrats in the courts in the middle of our living rooms and puts teens at risk.
Well, thank you very much. And it looks like our time is just about up here. What we've been listening to today is the ballot measure to both Bernadette Wilson from the Yes On campaign and Yes On 2 campaign, pardon me, and Rhiannon Good from the No On 2 campaign.
Thanks, Tika.
Thank you so
thank
much.
Thank you, ladies, both for joining us this afternoon.
Pleasure
for our
to
listeners
be here.
Today, thank all of you who've been calling in. For those of you we couldn't get to, our deepest apologies. And we will be rebroadcasting this show tonight at 10 p.m. Do know that you cannot call in. It is just a recording of the show. Time is up next week, next Wednesday. Tune in for Ellen Lockyer and the Alaska State Fair. I'm
Public Media. An archived copy of today's program, additional information, and links to all the websites mentioned on today's show are available online at kska.org. Send us your comments and suggestions of things you'd like to talk about at Hometown Alaska, 3877 University Drive, Anchorage, Alaska, 99508. This is KSKA Anchorage.